I'm Martin Wilson, and this is The Next Turn, powered by ProTurn.io. The Next Turn is the home of conversations about skiing, ski racing, and sport. So thank you for joining us in the pursuit of better. To be better athletes, better coaches, better parents, and better fans. This week, a conversation with Anouk Patti from U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Welcome back to The Next Turn. It's good to have you here. As always, it is good to have Jeff Vibert and Kara Williams by my side. It may be a little bit harder to do it this week, but we pulled it off. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Martin. Hey, Kara. You guys getting excited for the World Champs coming up?
World Champs. Here we go. Kara, what are you thinking?
Oh, I'm excited. There's been so much action and drama and intrigue this season on the World Cup. I just can't wait to see how it all shakes up. I feel like everyone is performing at their best right now.
It seems like it's pretty competitive. And yeah, lots can happen. And quite honestly, just for my sleep cycle, I'm pretty happy to have like this little break between the last World Cup race and the World Championships. But I'm ready to get up at whatever time is necessary to watch. This week, we have an incredible conversation with Anouk Patti, the U.S. Ski and Snowboard's chief of sport. She's got a lot on her plate and she discusses a lot of it. But as we do, let's start with the business. Jeff, why don't you give us the hard facts on Anouk Patti?
Anouk Patti, chief of sport for the U.S. Ski and Snowboard, former U.S. ski team alumni and former NCAA giant slalom champion from Dartmouth College. Anouk Patti, in her new role, will develop and implement the organization's athletic strategic plan, working on the elite programs in the pipeline development from all teams, including alpine, free ski, Nordic, freestyle, ski jumping, Nordic combine, and snowboard, just to name a few. And that I mentioned, she's also in charge of coach education.
Kara, could you put this conversation in perspective for us? What is the story here?
Well, building on what Jeff just said, not only was Anouk Patti a world-class ski racer, but her professional resume is probably as impressive as they come. She worked at both JP Morgan and Bain & Company, during which time she got her MBA at Harvard Business School. And she now holds a position of U.S. Ski and Snowboard Chief of Sport. And U.S. Ski and Snowboard, of course, is the national governing body for alpine, cross-country, Nordic combined, freestyle, snowboarding, and free ski. And they support grassroots developments of those sports, as well as elite and national teams. And in this interview, Anouk speaks mainly about alpine skiing and covers a lot in a short time frame. And she outlines development initiatives, speaks to talent identification, as well as certifying and education everyone from clubs to coaches to high performance athletes. Anouk comes from corporate America, and she uses that experience to implement an OKR driven approach. And OKR stands for objectives and key results. And this methodology helps teams set measurable goals. And she speaks to the pathways, including the collegiate stream. She talks about criteria and how it allows athletes to blossom at different times. She talks about creating an environment so that athletes can achieve their dreams and ask the question, how can we help athletes get there? This is a super engaging conversation that will benefit everyone, in my opinion, from athletes to coaches to parents to high-level directors.
I appreciate that. Folks, you've got the hard facts from Jeff. You've got the story from Kara. And now we're going to share our conversation with Chief of Sport, Anouk Patti from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, here on The Next Turn.
My kids asked me, Mom, did you make that title up? And I was like, no, I didn't even make it up. This is the title they gave me. So I agree. I don't think I could have picked a better title. And it's become a bit of a running joke among my friends because it is kind of so cool. And I feel totally lucky. The funny thing is, though, it is actually what I do. Like, I do run the sports side of U.S. Ski and Snowboard. And it's a C-level position. So, like, it does fit what I do, but it just sounds so cool.
What is the purview of your job? When you say that you are the chief of sport, how are you directing, changing, moving the sport?
So my responsibility, just to kind of start there in terms of like what am I responsible for, is I'm a little bit like an athletic director in a big collegiate program where I'm responsible for all the anything related to sports, all of the athletic side of the organization. So within U.S. Ski and Snowboard, that means the all of the sports from alpine skiing, freestyle, snowboard, free ski, cross country, jumping. We're the NGB for all of those sports, which means I have responsibility for the elite level World Cup, World Championship, Olympic teams. So those athletes that are on the teams, we have 176 athletes that are part of our elite national team program, but then also responsible for the development initiatives that we have across the grassroots, whether that's talent identification, nurturing, and helping them through their pathway to get from the young juniors up to the elite level. It's developing the coaches, so providing coaches education so that we're creating a robust kind of influence network of those who are going to work with the athletes. It's working with the clubs so that we're certifying and educating the clubs to help the clubs, the infrastructure be as good as it can possibly be. And then it's the high performance initiatives that we have. So high performance is all the strength and conditioning, the sports science, the nutrition, the sports medicine, all of that, which at the elite level means we have a really, really cool, fancy gym here in Park City. But it also means reaching out to the clubs and giving them kind of benchmarking guidance on where they should have the athletes at any given time in their development pathway. So that's kind of what I've overview for.
And then you have lunch. And then what do you do?
I go for a run.
All right, good. What did you think the job was? And what did you find out it to be?
I mean, I had a pretty good idea of what it would be and what it would look like from a macro perspective. I didn't quite know and understand what it would look like day to day. And so coming in, what I have actually found, I mean, my approach in this role is to be very athlete centric. So I'm spending a lot of time engaging with each athlete individually, with the teams, like building up those relationships, but there's close to 200 of them. So that takes a little bit of time for sure. But I found it not only super rewarding, but really helpful in my role to talk to the athletes, get their perspective, and then come back and say, okay, we need to implement some of these changes based on what the athletes are telling me they need. So it's maybe a little bit different approach to, I mean, this role wasn't there before, but it's definitely an approach of very focused on the athletes, what they need.
I'm hearing that you're an advocate for the athletes. If you're listening to them, what are they saying? What are they asking for? What are the early things you're hearing?
Yeah, you know, it depends on the sport and the discipline. So those five or six sports that I mentioned before, they all have different disciplines under them. So for example, Alpine, it's not just two genders, it's speed and tech. Snowboard, it's half pipe, slope style, border cross. And each one of those has their own pod, their own culture, their own team dynamic. So while there are some things that are consistent across the organization, it's really, I have to go pod by pod and understand like what's going on in snowboard slope style, what's going on in men's speed on the Alpine side, and what do those groups need? So they all have their own individual thing. I think one thing I'm hearing pretty consistently from athletes is they want more, not so much more support, but more, they want to be pushed more, you know? And I think that's something that we can help pretty easily come in. And again, this is some of the disciplines are asking for it more, others are asking for it less, but they're hungry. They have big dreams, big goals, and they're saying, help us more to get there.
If you were to look at those five, six different bubbles, where are the strengths right now?
Yeah, no, I think we have strengths in all of them. So, I mean, literally just going sport by sport, free ski, we are the most dominant team in the world. And we have been since the sport started. I mean, we put that sport on the map, we created it, and we dominate. We win the Nations Cup, you know, every year. Border cross, snowboard border cross, we are also really, really strong there. Snowboard, we have dominated. You know, we have some huge iconic heroes like Sean White, Chloe, and they're great, but I'm a little concerned about the where we're at right now. You know, we don't dominate the way we used to, and we need to get that program back to where it was. Cross country, we are starting to really shine through, and our cross country program is in the best place it's ever been. We have some really fantastic athletes that have shown promising results at the junior level, which we haven't always had in the past. And that's a good indicator, obviously, of where they're going to come through at the senior level. But I think cross country is, we've got some really strong athletes, and we have a really good program there, which is actually structured a little bit differently to our other programs. They rely a little more on their club programs. I think freestyle is freestyle is obviously moguls and aerials. And I have high hopes and very high expectations for that program. I think we should be winning the Nations Cup hands down in those sports. And I'm pretty sure we will. Again, we have some phenomenal athletes there, and we've restructured that program a little bit. So it stands on its own, and it's going to really shine. And then Alpine, you know, I think people look at Beijing and think, well, that was a disaster, but there were a lot of things about Beijing that, you know, it's just the nature of the sport. It could have just gone a little bit the other way, and it would have been hugely successful. The nature of really all these sports is that they're teams, but we rely on individuals to perform and deliver. And on the Alpine side, we've got a lot of really, really phenomenal individual athletes that can come through. So I do feel like there's a lot there that we just need to push over the edge. So instead of getting a lot of top tens and fourth place finishes, which we are literally number one in the world in terms of, you know, the top tens and the almost there, we've got to just get that over so that they get on the podium. So I think there's a lot of things that are really good in each program. It's just a matter of executing to make them achieve what they should be achieving.
Can we go into the Alpine side a little bit? What's the SWOT analysis of the Alpine team right now?
So the Alpine team is admittedly, like, if you think of an athletic department, it's your football team, right? And it's really important in any program that you have a very strong Alpine team. I think we have a team that has a lot of potential, but we need to kind of up level a little bit how we've been doing things and why we've been doing things. So I'm trying to bring a little bit more of a sense of urgency to achieving the results that we want to. So not just sort of doing things the same way that we've always been doing it, but really pushing. And if you think of, like, my role as a leader, I have the coaches and the high performance and all the support staff that report directly to me. The athletes don't report in directly, obviously. It's not like an NBA team where the athletes are your employee. So it's a matter of influence. And that's why you have to build the relationships with the athletes so you can influence them to sort of ride on the train that you want to. Mm-hmm. And I think the athletes are very focused on wanting to do well, but I think both athletes and coaches probably can push a little bit more in terms of accountability and urgency. And that's the big focus right now.
How do you do that? What are you asking the coaches to implement with the athletes for that extra little bit of accountability? What is it? Is it just come on?
No, I think there's, like, so I come from corporate America, where we're really good at structure and processes and methodology. And so it's maybe bringing a little bit of that. So organizationally, we've used OKRs for quite some time, which is in sports, we're all used to goals, but it's like applying goals in the corporate world. And so we have been doing that organizationally, but everyone says, well, we kind of have been doing it, but not systematically. So the first thing is, like, okay, let's use OKRs within our staff systematically. Everyone has to write down what they're focused on, what they're working on, making sure it's aligned with our broader organizational goals, making sure they're not doing things that are not aligned with it. So there's a bit of, you know, time efficiency there. And then as managers, ensuring that we sit down with staff and review that, you know, once a quarter, if not more often. Like, are you doing the things and progressing along the path that we had set we wanted to be on from the very beginning? So that's a good way to hold staff a little bit more accountable. And then other things, like, for example, making sure that everybody is writing camp reports, right? So like, you go to New Zealand for a month, you go to Chile for a month. When you come back, like, let's document, like, how did it do? Let's review the camp. What worked? What didn't work? How are the athletes doing? What do they need to do differently or better the next camp? So a very systematic approach to how are we progressing from one period into the next, not just like being lackadaisical and, okay, well, that was good. Now let's just see how it goes at the next camp, but being very, very structured. And then on the athlete side, you know, I was a little surprised when I came in, like, writing down goals is like, we learned that in high school, right? I was a little surprised at how that just wasn't being done across the entire organization. So I put in place, and the other thing is that it was in some places being done, but we had like 15 different formats. So I drafted up just a standard, you know, goal sheet that is like short-term goals, medium-term goals, long-term, and then what's your plan to get there, which is really the most important part. And the plan broken out by the key areas that you want to focus on, from technique to strength, mental strength, physical strength, equipment, you know, all of the key buckets. And then we put it, you know, we built a cloud-based application and then have gotten all of the athletes, all 180 of them, to document their goals and their plan for the year. And it was a little surprising when I came in, like, it wasn't like everybody was like, okay, yeah, that's a great idea, or yeah, we already do it. It was kind of surprising to me how, I mean, it took work pushing this through and getting it done. And it was a little bit of pushback from athletes, quite a bit from coaches, but we're there and now we have it done. And so that's, you know, it's going to stay and we're going to use that, but it's now a tool that, you know, you have any given athlete, their whole support team, whether it's the nutritionist, the sports psych, their athletic trainer, can go in and look at, okay, what are the goals for this athlete? What are they working on? And then start tracking, kind of reviewing each camp. How did it go? What does the athlete want to focus on a little bit more? And we just didn't have that before. So those are some of the things that structurally I've been putting in place to try to build in a little bit more kind of professionalism and that sense of urgency around what we're trying to do.
When you look at, you're talking a lot about the success of the team. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to think about it just a little differently. If you look at an athlete through their course of time on the U.S. ski team from development to that, how do you measure that success? How do you know that if that athlete was served well during their time? Mm-hmm. What's the measure there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a couple of ways to look at it. The first one I would say is, what did the athlete want to accomplish? And did they do that? You know, because we're really here to serve the athletes in their journey. So success kind of needs to be defined a little bit by the athlete and where they want to go. And if we create a system where the athlete accomplishes that, then I think we've done a pretty good job. The other thing for us internally is, I think we need to, I mean, the way I look at it is, are we creating the right environment so that the athletes can achieve their dreams? So I'm very focused on, like, what are the things that we're doing in terms of athlete support to help them get there? Because at the end of the day, the athletes, they're the ones who have to deliver, right? All we can do is create the environment and all of the support systems to help them and create an athlete experience that allows them to achieve their dreams. That's, you know, I can only hold myself accountable to the things I can actually control. And those are the things that we can actually control. So in terms of, like, our measures of success, those are the things that, and we talked about OKRs that are specifically being measured. Like, what is the athlete experience like? What's the onboarding process when they're brought into the team? What's their experience like when they go to a camp? And we are starting to quantify this. So we're using, you know, online surveys of getting some data around what was that experience like? And then their journey all the way through the team, including then when they're offboarded, whether they retire or they don't make the team or they're injured, whatever, whatever reason it is that they're moving into the next phase, what is that offboarding process like? And we're putting a lot of resources into that right now because it's a big transition for athletes. And also I can tell you, having been an athlete myself, the way in which you are offboarded stays with you for years and years and years. And the better we can be at offboarding those athletes and helping them transition, the happier they will be with us. So it's really looking at that whole experience, but then also when they're on the team, what are we doing to make sure that we're supporting them to make sure that they're achieving their dreams? Like, are we giving them the best strength and conditioning coaches that we can? Are we giving them all the nutrition advice they need? Are we giving them the best sports psych people out there that will help them get their mental game on? Do we have the best coaches in the world who will be on snow, giving them the technical guidance that they need? That whole athlete support system, like, how are we doing in that? So those are the areas that I would hold myself, you know, and evaluate our organization. And then obviously there's the medal. So there's the actual, like, how many podiums do we get? And I think to me, it's a good thing to measure medals and, you know, it's what we're about. It's what the athletes are about. And it's what a lot of the staff is here for, because they like to win. I mean, mm-hmm. we high performing organization.
No shame.
Yeah. It's professional sports and we want to win. So, yeah.
That's a great answer. I've heard a lot of, well, talk about that, setting up a winning culture and just a healthy culture and the difference and the similarities between a healthy culture and a winning culture.
Well, I think it depends on, like, what the organization, like the framework in which the organization operates and what they're trying to achieve. Because, like, a high performing organization, and I've had a number of different experiences, and in each of those experiences, what defines high performing isn't necessarily always the same. So, like, I started my career in investment banking. What defines a high performing organization there is, like, people are, like, solely focused on the base point. It's extremely results oriented. It's individually oriented. It's not a team culture. You're rewarded for bringing in the dollars, right? And then I went into tech, and high performing in tech is all about innovation, try and fail. It's about kind of like the fun spirit a little bit. You know, you Google, I mean, everyone's seen images of the Google and the Facebook mm-hmm. offices. It's like a kindergarten playground. Like it's that's kind of the, because you're trying to foster this, like, creativity that you want people to come up with these great, phenomenal new ideas. I think in our dynamic of an NGB, and, you know, for lack of a better way, I do think it's professional sports. What's high performing is more of, like, the team culture, the collaborative feeling of everybody's in it together, and making sure that we're creating, like, really safe environment for the athletes and the staff to come in and feel like they can truly be themselves, and push themselves as hard as they possibly can, but also let someone else push them as hard as they can. So there's a high need for trust and respect, because when you think about, like you think about a downhiller, and they're standing there and they got to go down the hill at 80 miles an hour and hit these hard turns, and coaches are telling them, like, just hold on as long as you can, you know, wait it out, develop that speed. Like, you have to trust that coach that they're telling you the right line. And if you don't trust them, then you don't, you know, you're apprehensive, and there's big injuries that can happen. The consequences are really significant. So even though we have athletes that compete on an individual level, the team feeling is really, really important. These athletes, they travel together, they, you know, live together, they eat together, they train together. The only time they're not, like, united as, like, a team is when they're actually in the starting gate. And that's, like, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes of the day, that's it. But everything else is a team. So one of the things I'm really trying to do is, it's all about the athletes, but the athletes as a team. Like, you have to create the support structure for an individual athlete for sure, but on the whole, it is a team. It's a team environment that we're trying to create. And to me, that's what the high performing culture is for all of the sports.
If that's how you're measuring the national teams and the high level, high performance stuff, part of your job as well is to look at the clubs and the academies. How do you measure that success? I don't want you to give me the gold standard. I know what that is, right? But how do you look at a club and go, that club's doing all right?
Yeah, yeah. We actually have had this conversation quite a few times recently because we just did a deep dive on the club certification progress process. As you said, the gold, silver, bronze. And so I was asking, like, how do we do this? Like, what is the criteria? And we had a long conversation. And as you say, there are clear metrics that we use that define a club. To me, in my mind, just philosophically, it's, of course, they're compliant with all of our, you know, standards that we have and safe sport and all that. But that they're also creating an environment where athletes are welcome to come in, and they're providing a bit of accessibility to athletes who may not otherwise think about skiing or snowboarding. You know, they'd be more likely to go play football or soccer, but they're making a conscious effort to bring new athletes in. And then I think that they're very focused on youth development. And youth development in some sports is really far along. There's just a lot of science around it. There's a lot of thought. There's a lot of academic research around it. And we're getting there in skiing and snowboarding around how do you take a 10-year-old that is good, and what do you do to develop that athlete to be, you know, an Olympic gold medalist? Like, what are the steps you need to take? And to me, having the clubs be really thoughtful about what it is they're doing to develop those young athletes is really, really key. And then interestingly enough, on the gold standard right now, one of the things I would like to add is performance, is athletic performance. I mean, how many athletes are they putting into the top 500, 200, 100, you know, and then onto the national team? Because in my mind, you can't be a gold standard club if you're not putting out great athletes. Like, it just, it should be like, if we need to be driving performance from the elite level all the way down to the club. And so part of that is holding the clubs accountable. So I need them to be sending us great athletes.
Alpine skiing coaches know that video analysis is one of the most effective tools to improve athlete performance. But imagine, what if we could make video analysis simpler and even more effective? ProTurn.io empowers you to take your video analysis to the next level by overlaying speed, acceleration, and turn data directly into your videos. This enhanced video analysis helps athletes of all levels dig deeper. With speed and acceleration right on the video, athletes can gain a more detailed understanding of the direct impact of their tactics and technique. With ProTurn, video review sessions become more concrete and easier to understand. Take a closer look at your turns and start elevating your training. Visit proturn.io/thenextturn to get 10% off your ProTurn starter pack. ProTurn.io. Train smarter, improve faster. And now back to our conversation with Anouk Patty on the next turn.
As a coach, I'm always looking at the development system, and I cheer for both Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
And I think at times the Canadian system's done really well and not so much, and vice versa. If that, I would say, tell me I'm wrong. I'm open to that. The U.S. is really good. Like, if you are a talented kid, you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
If you're a late bloomer and you struggle a bit, you may not be in the right system for success. Now, and I'm going to combine that with the NCAA, right? I think whatever sport the NCAA uses as a feeder system, that sport's the best in the world. Just about. Where does the NCAA fit into the pipeline as far as growth of the athlete, aging of the athlete, maturing of the athlete, and just keeping more people in the cauldron longer?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. I mean, we have, as a country, one of the greatest assets in all sports, which is this collegiate training program, right? And it's, I mean, I'm a huge fan of collegiate football. Was at a Notre Dame game last weekend. Like the way that that system works as a pipeline into the pros, not to mention like the commercial value of it for football, basketball in particular, is pretty incredible. On just to your first comment around like if you're a late bloomer, we are looking at our criteria right now. We're doing a bit of a deep dive on how does the criteria allow for athletes to blossom at different times and be within the system. I think there's been a perception that if an athlete isn't in the system early, they never have a chance. And I don't believe in that, and B, I don't believe it's true. So we want to make sure that the criteria is such that if an athlete does bloom later, and you know, how late are we talking? But if in their early 20s, they suddenly, you know, get super strong and fast, that they can come in and they can make our team, they can come in and make the C team or whatever. So that's something that we're looking at. And probably in the next couple of months, we'll be publishing the criteria, but that is definitely an area to focus on. The NCAAs, I mean, you know, I was on the US team. When I was on the team, it was one or the other. You couldn't do both. And when I finally did go to Dartmouth and ski, I almost felt like I was ostracized. Like it was like, okay, you go there, you're off on your own.
Weirdo.
Yeah, total weirdo. And then I won NCAAs that first year, not really realizing kind of how big or important the NCAA champion title is. And it's really important. You know, I think people across this country, I've always been amazed when I've done, you know, interviews for new jobs in corporate America, people are more enamored with the fact that I was an NCAA champion than that I raced a World Cup. Like that's what they relate to. And so that said, I think there's two ways to think about the NCAAs or an education, really. One is we have young athletes who come in, they make our team, they progress through, and then at a certain point, they graduate from high school and they would also like to get an education. And I 100% support that. It was not what I had. And I want to make sure that when we have athletes who are on the team, they want to go, they can go. And so right now on our cross-country team, all but two of our athletes have either graduated from college or are in college. On the Alpine team, 50% of our women's team is either in college or has graduated. And a good chunk of those, the non 50%, they're still in high school, a couple of them. So
give it time.
I think six of those are actually at Dartmouth. So there's definitely a big push there, but any school is works great. So they're having the opportunity to go. And then on the men's team, I think it's like 30-35% are actually going to college. So that is one thing is that we got to make sure that we're doing. Then the other thing is there are those athletes who don't make the team early. So they, you know, hopefully choose to go to college. Can we create a way for them to come in? And absolutely, I'm totally supportive of that. Again, we're looking at our criteria to make sure that, that the athletes are going not just to, so the collegiate races now are obviously FIS points, that you can get the FIS points to come into the team, and that we totally support it. That said, I will say people are always saying to me, can you provide another path for collegiate racers to make it on the team? Like, is there another way? And, you know, at the end of the day, there's one way to make the US ski team, and that is to ski fast. I don't care if you come from the NCAA path, if you are skiing over in Europe on your own, if you're skiing in our system, I don't care how you do it. You just ski fast and you'll make our team. And so that is pretty straightforward. And if you're racing and you're winning carnivals and you win NCAAs, like you're probably going to be on our team. So I'm 100% supportive of that. I need those athletes.
I like it. Well, I was a collegiate coach 20 years ago, so it's 20 years and I'll wait a couple more months in because it's exactly what needs to happen. So I'll give you a little more time. Can I switch gears here a little bit? As far as gender equality goes, our sport has done some things okay. We've always had equal prize money. We'll give them that, right? Yeah. It took them a while for not to be called ladies, so we'll get kind of a little slack there. But in North America right now, the leadership of both Alpine Canada and U.S. Ski and Snowboard right now is predominantly women.
Mm-hmm.
Just take U.S. Ski and Snowboard. There's on the at the C level, right? Was there 4 or 5 women?
Yeah.
What does that afford the organization? What does that, how does it make us better?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I would say 2 things. One, I think it makes us warmer and more nurturing. And I think the athletes need that. I think they need, like I talked earlier, I want to create a safe place where they can come in and be the best they can possibly be. And having a group of women run an organization, most of us have been, or our mothers, not having, but our mothers, and you just can relate and you want to help these athletes and care for them. And so I think there's a noticeable difference on that. And the athletes tell me, like they're really, they feel it. You know, so it's a more a touch, I think, than anything else. The other thing is that I think women come in and they sort of bring a different perspective when there's a conflict or a challenge. We kind of bring more of a collaborative approach to it. Like, okay, we got a problem, but like, how do we fix it? And less about, you know, kind of like the bravado of like, well, I'm going to fix it. It's like, no, like we're all in this together and there's no kind of one-upping. It's like we together are going to solve it. And I think that's much more, the fact is, I think women are more like that. It's more like problem solving together. So I think those are the 2 of the big things. The other thing is that, you know, Sophie has a tremendous amount of sports marketing experience. I come from kind of corporate America. Trisha has raised more money than I think anybody around here at any NGB, without a doubt. Brooke is our CFO, who has righted this ship from really kind of phenomenal things or challenges that we had. And I think we're all pretty driven. And so it's not that it's a group of moms running the organization. Is like, we are all very driven women who want to take this place to the next level, and we're going to do it together. So I think that's just kind of my sense on what might be different about women running the show versus men.
I'm laughing a little bit. I asked my wife this question this morning and she said, they're not moms. like look at their resume, like take their names out of it. Just so happens, and we came to the same place that sometimes there's just a level of warmth and comfort and just a diffusing to the situation a little bit.
Yeah.
Why can't men coaches bring that?
I just think there's a bit of ego involved. I mean, look, I have 2 kids. I have a boy and a girl, or you know, they're young adults now, and so I see how they evolve. And I think men and young men are, particularly in the society, like there's a path for them that they need to be bigger than them, bigger than everybody else. And, you know, they need to sort of achieve this place. And there's sort of a level of understanding that you kind of do that by the bravado and a little bit the bull in the china shop. And, you know, the women coaches that we have, they understand that. I think more and more, instead of just doing what the men did and following in that path to be successful, like women can do it their way. And their way is a little bit more nurturing. And they get, you know, many times better results. But on the coaches side, like I'm making a concerted effort to bring in more women coaches in all of our sports. It's a big priority of mine. And we've brought in some women on the Alpine side. We've got Forrest Peterson, who's a former athlete, skied NCAAs at Dartmouth, and is now on our women's development team. And she is making a phenomenal difference on that team. I have parents literally calling me saying, it's so great to have a woman coach for my young girl.
Oh, I want to push here a little bit, because I was someone who was trying to be a little bit progressive. My last job, I was coaching. I was a women's director, and I had a wide range of athletes and a lot of, quite frankly, unhealthy teenage young women. And we spent a lot of time on basic, instead of going to do an extra round of squats, I'm like, we're going to go up this hill and we're going to go meditate and do stuff like this job. Just trying anything, all sorts of group things. And quite frankly, I was a professional for 20 years at that point, trying something new. And I'm getting called sensei or Mr. Miyagi. And it, you know what I mean? This was right around, you can imagine the time, snowflake and all this. But how do we create an environment for coaches that is similar to an environment for athletes? For an athlete, we want to support them. We want them to try. We want it to be okay if they fail, as long as they're given an honest effort.
Yeah.
What can we do? How do we teach clubs? The trick, it seems like you have it at the high end right now, that there's enough of a balance. How do we teach that further down the pipeline?
Yeah. It's funny. I just read a book by Phil Jackson, who was all about mindfulness and was really one of the first professional coaches to bring that in. And I mean, he says it made a huge difference. And so I have spent a lot of time with the NFL as well, and they're really starting, and actually with the San Diego Padres, those guys are really doing a lot around more kind of, on one hand, innovative kind of things like more mindfulness, but also, you know, they're doing acupuncture. So they're trying different things that are outside of the box to help the athletes and the staff progress and get better. I think clubs, I don't think they're there yet. I think it's probably something that we as the NGB need to help them and maybe push a little bit, but you know, we need to kind of explain the value of why it's important to do meditation or mindfulness exercises or focus on recovery just as much as, you know, the pushing yourself at the club level, because I think they're focused on the young athletes and development. And obviously those clubs are focused on not just athletics, but a lot of them academics as well, the academies. And so they have their hands full, but coming from California, where I've spent the last 20 years, like there's not a high school out there that isn't really, really focused on and got every single kid focused on mental health issues, female and male body image issues, you know, sexuality issues, gender issues, like all of these things that kind of we need to get the clubs aware of and embracing to kind of bring them into the sort of this new era. And I don't feel that we're there yet, but it's something we need to kind of push a little bit more on, because it's important. I mean, and that's how, when you talk to some of these, whether it's a world-class athlete or, you know, a top leader who's out there, like they're all doing it. They're all doing these more innovative practices that kind of help them to sort of calm themselves and also recover, so they can go back out there and, like, you know, go all out.
Our last episode last season was with Allison Forsyth from Canada. I'm not sure if you know who Allison Forsyth is or her story. But it was primarily about safe sport, her story, and how she's taken on safe sport and changes in her advocacy. And it was really quite alarming, sort of where her report of where we are with safe sport. You know, I think we check a lot of boxes. Can you talk a little bit about how we're going to make safe sport really useful and impactful in our clubs, like as opposed to just a liability check?
Yeah, as opposed to check the box. So we as the NGB see all of the safe sport, and we have responsibility to sort of see them, track them, and watch them for all the different club safe sport issues. Mm-hmm. And there definitely are quite a few out there. I can't really say benchmarking against other grassroots programs if we're more or less, but there definitely are matters out there. And I think it's culturally the sports like you said, they're very male dominated on the coaching side. Although there are more women that are coming through at the junior levels, and I need those women to speak up and be strong women and help on this. Like they, I need those women to really help us try to move the needle and support those younger athletes. I think we're pushing hard on this. I mean, if I look back to when I was racing, it's night and day. Like we've come a long way. I mean, when I was on the team, athletes were dating coaches, tech reps. I mean, each yeah. other fine, but like dating your coach like that, we don't allow that on our team at all. And I mean, everyone doesn't, but it's now we have rules and processes in place to make sure it doesn't happen. But back then it was like just the norm. So I do think we've come a long way, but we have more to go. We definitely have more to go. And we need to be a leader and kind of a beacon on sort of how to do that and how to approach it. And our coaches obviously go through safe sport training every year, but we talk about it internally as well. Like we talk about, and it's, to me, it's not safe sport is just, that's kind of the mechanism by which you teach people and you keep track of everybody. To me, the question is, how do we create this culture where everybody is treated with respect and fairness? And it is, and it's truly a physically, if not emotionally, a mental safe place to be. So we have a lot of conversations with coaches around the right way to engage with athletes. You know, female body issue image is not another issue that is kind of a part of that as well. And so we spend time talking to the coaches about, here's how you should engage with our female athletes on this topic. Here's how you should not, like just education. And so as the NGB, I think we have an obligation to do that, not only for our elite team athletes, but also to help push at the club levels. And we do that. And we do it, you know, as much as we can, but I think the clubs, I mean, they're trying hard and they're doing a pretty good job, but I think the trends have been really good. There's more we can do for sure.
A couple more minutes left. So I'll switch gears again, if you don't mind. I used to live down the road from Killington near Rutland, and Killington's this great mountain. We have this World Cup here and we have 30,000 fans, and there's a little hill next to it, Pico. Great little hill. And I always thought that if we could light that hill and you had a bus, we could change the town and change our sport in this town. That's my big picture dream. Do you have a big picture dream like that for our sport?
I would like, there's a couple things that I would like. I would like to be recognized internationally as the most highly respected, prestigious ski and snowboard program in the world, where people talk about our program and think like, wow, that is a really stellar program and they are doing some amazing things, and like consistently have that said about us and thought about us on a number of different levels. So kind of like the public perception. I would like us to get to a place where not only are we winning the nation's cup, but we have athletes on the podium who are of different color, of different sexual orientations, of different economic backgrounds, you know, whomever wants to participate in this sport can participate and can get onto the podium. And I also want us to get to a place where we are a sport where athletes, young athletes, when they're choosing to play whatever different sport that they're wanting to play, they say, no, I want to go ski or I want to go snowboard. And then they come through our development pathways and onto our team and then leave and go on into the next chapter of their lives and feel like they had a really extraordinary and pretty unique experience that made them a pretty special and wonderful person. I think that's, you know, that whole experience is something that I want people to leave with and say that was pretty phenomenal. So those are, I think for me, like if down the road, those three things we could say like, yeah, that organization is freaking top notch. Like they know what they're doing. We're winning medals with BIPOC athletes and gay athletes on the podium and straight and white and people coming from, you know, the inner city of New Jersey and coming from Newark and they're getting on the podium. And then we have athletes retire saying, wow, that was great. Thank you. Then I think we've done a good job.
Full disclosure, I'm a bleeding heart liberal. I love everything you just said. Do you ever worry that that message may piss off people?
No, I don't. Maybe someone somewhere else in the building might, but I don't. I mean, my job is to develop the sport. And if I'm not tapping into all of the athletes out there, then I'm not tapping into the best ones. So in order for us to achieve the athletic goals that we have, I have to have all of these athletes coming in and I have to make sure that they have a great experience and that they leave feeling good about it. And then they send their kids back into the program, you know, and we have different perspectives and ideas coming in to like fuel off of that so that, you know, we're all learning from each other. So yeah, no, I'm not worried.
Welcome back. Thank you so much to Anouk Patty for a great conversation and sharing her insight into an incredible job that she has. It is now time for our Swix Thoughts of the Day. Before we share ours, I'd encourage you all to share your Swix Thoughts of the Day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com. Kara, you're going to be up first. What are you thinking? What are your Swix Thoughts of the Day?
Oh, where to start? She does have an incredible job. And first and foremost, I really respect that Anouk is taking an athlete-centric approach and she's invested in producing happy, healthy athletes and listening to what athletes want and need in all the disciplines that she oversees, which is crazy. Her main goal, she says, is simply to create an athlete experience that enables the athlete to be their best. And I love that she's using OKRs to quantify this, collecting data which can be used in the future to help future athletes and teams, coaches, managers. And I'm thinking this ties into what she said about the importance of team culture, because you can use this, you can share this information. Yes, it's an individual sport, but these athletes are together all the time. They train, eat, travel together. The only time they're not united as a team is for those few minutes out of each day when they are alone on the race course. And we've seen how creating positive team culture works. We've seen it with the Norwegians. And now this year, I would say we've certainly seen glimpses of it from the Americans and even the Canadians. And this made me think back to our conversation with Norwegian tech skier Atle Lee McGrath. And he told us that everyone contributes to the culture of inclusiveness and sharing on the Norwegian team. They all stay together. They eat together. They behave as any team would, as equals. There's no class structure. Guys like Alexander Amatkilde and Lucas Bratton, and now I'd say Atli, he's up there too. And they are allowing the rookies, the newcomers on their team, to observe them, to interact with them. And in doing this, they pass on really important knowledge that one can only acquire with experience. And to me, I think this is what's going to fulfill the legacy that Anouk is seeking, to have US ski and snowboard be recognized internationally as the most highly respected, prestigious program in the world on a number of different levels. She wants inclusivity and she wants athletes to leave the sport with a positive experience.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. Jeff, that's going to be tough to up, but I'm going to give you a good swing at it. Jeff, what are you thinking? What are your Swix thoughts of the day?
Well, Kara, that was very well said, and she certainly does have some lofty goals to be the most prestigious ski and snowboard organization in the envy of the world, as you said, she certainly has her work cut out for her. You know, I like the fact that she, you know, wants to be athlete-centered and athlete-focused, and what, you know, she said a couple of times, you know, what does the athlete want, and what do they want to get out of the program? What are their hopes? What are their dreams? And she talked about being an organization that supports them to achieve those results and achieve those goals and help them meet their dreams. But, you know, here comes the butt,
the
guys.
Big butt, Jeff. Here we go.
The butt. Is that altruistic, right? We know that the reality is she comes from an organization that uses OKRs, as you said, which is objectives and key results. Bottom line is, if you ski fast, you're going to be on the US ski team. There's still medals and podiums that they're after, and they want to win. She said that clearly. They want to be a winning organization. I just hope that there's room, and they've released a new criteria. You can check it out for yourself. They do have A, B, C. I think they have D teams in the U.S. And so hopefully they can keep people like Paula Molson's, like Brian McLaughlin around after they achieve success. And then they have some setbacks. They can go the NCAA route and they can still come back to the World Cup and still, as you said, Kara, be part of a U.S. ski team, much like the Norwegians, where they have mentors and people to look up to, people to chase. And the last thing I want to say about this, guys, is, and I love the fact that she said we need to support our coaches as well through this process. She did talk about ego in coaching, as we know, that's a big thing. But part of it is the coaches need to feel safe and secure in their environment, that while they're helping the athletes try and achieve their goals and meet these results, that if they don't achieve them right away, they're not out of a job and they can still help those athletes get where they want to go and bring the U.S. ski and snowboard team to that lofty goal of the most prestigious organization in the world.
Well, 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 Jeff, you actually stuck it up there at Kara's level. That's pretty impressive. Those are some great thoughts. I appreciate it. For me, I'm not going to go on much further other than there's a few things that I really like that Anouk was saying. One, that her role and the job of the organization is to help support and serve athletes. If that's the mission and they stay focused on that, I feel really comfortable about it. Kara, like you were saying about creating the right environment, how important that is. Jeff, you were talking about how Anouk was talking about ski fast and you'll have space on our team. I hope that's right. And I hope that comes to fruition in time. I also like the interesting perspective when we talked about gender in the sport and gender in leadership, that the women running the organization right now can bring some warmth and nurturing to the athletes and to our sport. And I've got no reason to think that that's anything but super valuable to the athletes. I've seen Anouk on the hill at Killington. I've seen her at a couple of races. I've talked to a few athletes. She's getting to know them. She's putting action to the words that she spoke of here. And I'm willing to give her a lot of space and grace to see what she can develop. It seems to be working. There seems to be some momentum when you look at least specifically on the Alpine team, but definitely with the Nordic team and the other sports under the umbrella of US Ski and Snowboard, those cultures are there and it seems to be working. I can't wait to see what Anouk can pull off here in the next couple of years, and I'm cheering for her. Those are my Swix thoughts of the day. I encourage you all to share your Swix thoughts of the day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com. But until next week, thank you for listening. We'll see you soon here on The Next Turn. Be well.